Today's reading is from Mark. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. Other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Water symbolizes many things.
Water cleanses.
It restores.
Water gives life.
It is peaceful.
It is essential.
Water is powerful.
Where there is water, hope dwells.
With God, there is always something in the water.
Good morning. I invite you to take out your outline for the message this morning, and I feel like I need to introduce myself to you. This is the first time I've had a chance to preach in the 9:30 contemporary service here in the chapel. Dave Williamson and I are flip-flopping today. So he's over in the sanctuary, then he'll be back in here for 11 o'clock. So for those of you who don't know, I'm Rob Fuquay. I'm actually employed here at St. Luke's. I didn't just get thrown up here today, and really glad to have the chance to be here at 9:30 this morning, and welcome to each of you. We're glad that you're here today. So this past Monday, I had a meeting in Nashville, Tennessee, and left early afternoonish, so around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I was about an hour south of Louisville, which means I was in the middle of nowhere, and I started hearing warnings on the radio station I was listening to about severe thunderstorms, 60-mile-an-hour winds, quarter-size inch hail, you know, biblical proportions kind of stuff. And as I went to different stations, well, I was hearing it like on each station. And then they started saying kind of where to look out for this, South Central Kentucky. So, okay, this is my area, right? And that the storm's moving from east to west. So literally I'm driving south over here going this way. So I'm driving down 65, and then I come across an area that's pretty wet. There's obviously been a lot of heavy rain and limbs and debris on the side of the highway, and I thought, you know, I just missed it. I could see the dark clouds over on the left side. But then, a few minutes later, the wind starts picking up again, and I see really dark clouds to my right. And I thought, oh boy, here it comes. But I was able to skirt it. And I thought, that good living of mine is just paying off right now. I am avoiding these storms. And then a few minutes after that, I see the dark clouds dead ahead. I mean, like black clouds. And then this just wall of gray that settled in on the interstate in front of me. So I start looking at the maps on my phone to think, maybe there's a side road I can take and kind of go around this. But this is South Central Kentucky. Nobody lives there. So there aren't any other roads besides I-65, right? Sorry, Kentucky people. I know. So I go into it, and except for the hail, thank goodness, it was everything that it was built up to be. I mean, some of the hardest wind and rain I can remember ever driving through. I mean, literally blinding. My windshield wipers going as fast as they could, still not fast enough. And the traffic came to a crawl. You know, I just sort of focused on the taillights in front of me and just crept along. And I know I could have stopped. I could have stopped, but that would be like admitting victory to the storm, you know? So I just kept crawling along, and then eventually it cleared and the traffic was able to pick up again. Now, whether you stop, whether you creep through it, however you do it, one thing is really, really clear. For the route that I was taking, there was no avoiding a storm. For where I was going to go through a storm that day. And it made me think about driving through storms. I mean, nobody wants to drive through a storm, do they? Who wants to go through a storm? But if you are a seriously storm-averse person, how does that affect the way you live? I mean, if you're the kind of person who checks the weather carefully and says, oh goodness, I might go through a storm if I'm going to get to where I'm going. I'm not going to go today. Or I'm going to replan the route. Or you may be a person who says, you know what, that distance is so great, I cannot be guaranteed that I'm going to be able to get there with the storm. So I'm just never going to that place. I'm never going to go that road because there's no guarantee that a storm might come up. You know, if you're a seriously storm-averse person, it affects the way you live. And of course, I'm not just talking about transportation anymore. I'm talking about storms of all kinds. Relational storms, physical storms, emotional storms, storms of life. And if you're a storm-averse person, it'll seriously impact the way you live. It's just hard to live well and to live with goals and to be a person who experiences the things that God wants for us and avoid storms all the time and not be willing to face storms. One of the most significant experiences the disciples of Jesus ever had in coming to identify who Jesus is happened in a storm. And I imagine if you were to ask them on the other side, would you go through that again? They would say, are you kidding? No way. But I can also imagine them in the same breath saying, I'm so glad I didn't miss it either. Now, why do I say that? Well, look at how this story begins. You see the verse there at the top of your outline. Jesus said to his disciples, let's go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. Now, let's appreciate where this took place on the Sea of Galilee. We have a map that kind of shows the different journeys that Jesus took in his ministry across Galilee. And this is journey number one. So you see in the center that curved red line number one, Jesus left Capernaum and went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee called Gadara. Now that was probably a trip of about 5 to 7 miles, depending on exactly where they landed. So that was about a 5 to 7 mile trip across the lake. Now, if you're standing on the shore of Capernaum today, that's what it looks like on a clear, sunny day. You can see the other side. You're looking that far away. But here's what the same view looks like when a storm comes up. Kind of like driving down I-65. That wall of gray settles in. You can't see the other side. Here's what it looks like in a storm on Galilee. I mean, you would think you're out in the middle of the Atlantic, wouldn't you? I mean, it could get quite rough, and for a small boat, it easily capsizes a boat on Galilee. So if you're several miles away from shore and your boat capsizes, I mean, that's a tough swim, isn't it? So it's a life-threatening storm. And let's add to the fear of this situation another little factor called the haunted factor. You see, in that day and time, it was just a popular belief that all of the hostile forces in the world, all of the things that we might call evil or demonic, it was believed that they dwelt in the seas. When a sea was churned up, when it was a time of storm, it was like those hostile forces were being released. So if you're a disciple and you kind of have this built-in fear of the sea anyway, that it can become a haunted place, and just the physical factor of it being a scary place to be. Why were they out there? This is a key part in understanding this story. The reason that they were in this scary place is they were doing what Jesus told them to do. They were obeying Jesus' word. He said, let's get in the boat and go to the other side. What does it mean? It means if we are obedient in our faith, sometimes it steers us into a storm, not away from them. It takes us right into the path of a storm. If you're a seriously storm-averse person, it will be hard to be faithful sometimes. Because sometimes being faithful means being willing to face storms. So how can we be faithful when we're in a place of fear? Well, let's think about some observations in the story for today and what it teaches us. There's some unique points in this story as it's told, unique to Mark. This story's told in Matthew and Luke as well, but Mark tells it in a very different way, points out some things that the other stories don't point out. And I want to pay attention to those and then think about some questions that each of them would raise. So the first thing to point out is the verse that you'll see, number one, there were also other boats with him. Now this is the only version of the story that mentions this. Jesus had been teaching all day. At the end of the day, come night, he says, let's go to the other side. He gets in the boat with the disciples. They start making their way. There are other boats with them. That's the last time we hear about the other boats. The next thing we read is they go into a storm. There are no other boats anymore. They probably left. Now, I thought of kind of a silly little way to illustrate this morning. So I want us to think about what these other boats might have looked like. So I have here a miniature Sea of Galilee, okay? All right. And we've got a boat, and we've got Jesus. And the arms move. So Jesus is saying to the disciples, come along, come along. Let's get in the boat. So here is Jesus in the boat, and then we've got another boat. And then we've got other people who are in the boat. So other boats are with Jesus, and they're saying, hey, we want to follow you. We like what you have to say. We believe what you say has truth in it. We're going to be your followers. So the other boats are just kind of moving around saying, hey, we're with Jesus. We like this. But then Jesus hits high. Oh, hey, lay down there, Jesus. It's tough water in there. So the water, look at that. Water's coming into the boat. It's getting a little scary. And what happens to these boats? They say, no, enough of that. I'm heading away. I'm going to head in a different direction. I want to follow Jesus because I really like... Oh, wait a minute. Jesus drowned here. I'm sorry. We gotta get Jesus standing back up. All right. Let's see if we can stand him up there. All right. We'll let the other disciple drown for a minute. Some people would say, I like what Jesus has to say. I like it that he stands up for the people who don't have a voice in the world, that he stands up with people who are on the other side of walls. But wait a minute. If that means it's going to get political, I'm going to steer my boat away. Oh, I like it that Jesus stands against discrimination. He stands for the rights of all people. I like that. But wait a minute. You mean I'm going to need to stand up and say something to people in my workplace that challenges the practices? I'm going to steer my boat away. Oh, I want to support Jesus' ministry, but I don't want to sacrifice my lifestyle. I don't want to give up any luxuries. I'm going to... Here's the question this raises. Who's the captain of my boat? Who's the captain of my boat? Am I willing to let Jesus be the captain of my boat? Or am I going to retain captain rights? So that anytime my faith steers me into a direction that's not so comfortable, hey, I can steer that thing back away and get back into a safe place. Who is the captain of my boat? The gospel really comes down to that question. Who do I allow to be the captain of my boat so that even if I get steered into a storm, I can believe that really is the place I need to be? I'm in the right place, even if it's a stormy place. Well, look at another observation in this story. And this is one that other stories have as well. Jesus was in the stern of the boat, sleeping on a cushion. He was in the boat, but he was asleep. So picture the waves just crashing the boat. All right, let's get Jesus wet now. And Jesus, let's don't sink it though. All right. Jesus is lying in the boat, sound asleep. And what is it that the disciples say? They wake him up and say, don't you care? Don't you care that we're perishing? Now, mind you, they didn't take a moment to go, well, wait a minute, he would perish too. He's in the same boat. He doesn't seem to be afraid. They don't think that way. What they want to do is, Jesus, we need you to be anxious with us. If you really care, you're going to get anxious right there with me. Have you ever done that to family members? Have you ever been all torn up inside and you're just anxious? And they're not entering into your anxiety with you. They're not letting themselves get all churned up about it. And you say, don't you care? If you really love me, you'd be fretting right along beside me. But there's an important question here about what is the nature of true peace. Is true peace about having the right conditions around me so that everything is calm? That when there is no unrest, then I can rest? Or is peace something I can have even when everything going on all around me is not at rest? There's a rather long question that this invites us to ask here, and you see it in your outline. Do I need a faith that brings Jesus into my distress, or a faith that allows Jesus to bring me into his peace? What does that look like when we allow Jesus to bring us into his peace? When I was right out of seminary, I served a church in England. And I remember this fella, older gentleman, talking to me about the most memorable sermon he ever heard in that church. It wasn't mine. He said, it was when I was a little boy. My mother brought me to a Sunday night service. It was during World War II. And a layman was preaching, not an ordained minister, not even somebody who was a licensed pastor, somebody who was just starting to explore this whole preaching thing. But it was somebody who was around middle age. I mean, it wasn't just a kid. Well, he was the preacher that night. He says, I'll never forget his text, Isaiah 26:3. He keeps in perfect peace those whose minds are stayed on thee. He said, here's the reason I'll never forget what he preached on. Because that night, the Luftwaffe, the German Air Force, was conducting a bombing raid. And the whole time he was preaching, we heard outside the bombs dropping. He said, but this pastor, he just kept preaching. It's almost like the sermon itself became an illustration because we were all sitting there getting anxious, starting to churn inside, but he just had the calmest demeanor, and he kept preaching. When your mind is stayed on him, he'll keep you in perfect peace. He says, every time I've been afraid throughout my life, I remember being a little boy listening to that preacher in church that night. What does it look like for you to allow Jesus to bring you into his peace? And one last observation about this story has to do with the word terror. Notice it says the disciples were terrified. Now, what were they terrified of? The storm, right? If you go back and read the whole of the story, this terror is not about the storm. This terror is about Jesus. This is after Jesus speaks to the storm and says, peace, be still. And the storm quiets down. And he kind of rebukes the disciples. He said, what are you afraid of? Do you not have faith? Do you not trust me? And everything is quiet. And the literal translation here isn't the word terror. The literal translation in the Gospel of Mark is, now they were really afraid. It compares the fear of the disciples. They were afraid when the storm was raging, but now they're really afraid because they have to recognize, who is this guy who's in our boat? I was afraid of the storm, but I don't know if I need to be more afraid right now. He has power over the hostile forces of my life. And if he has that kind of power, what does that mean for me as the right response? How should I respond to somebody with that kind of authority? You see, the water, Galilee, has been a place for the disciples to learn about Jesus' authority. The sea, all of the stories around Galilee, that has been education time for the followers of Jesus to learn about what his power is all about. But pretty soon they're going to leave the waters. They're going to leave Galilee, and they're going to go to Jerusalem. And they're going to follow Jesus as he enters into his storm. And they're going to watch him be put on trial. They're going to watch him face death. They're going to watch him die on a cross. And they're going to have to grapple with this idea that the man who stood in their boat and had power and authority over the wind and the waves allowed himself to die. This is a story that's not just about the power of true peace, but the nature of true power. That they will come to understand that his power is not about force. They would come to understand that eventually God's power would be revealed, that the greater hostile forces to the world, not just the things that threaten my life, but the things that threaten God's purposes, are overcome not by physical force. They're overcome with the power of humility and love and grace. They would one day come to see that. But right now they had to determine, am I willing to trust the power and authority of this person over my life? Look at one last question that this story invites us to ask. When I'm scared the most, will I trust that God is most at work? When I'm scared the most, will I trust that God is most at work? As they would watch Jesus die on a cross, as they would watch his body be buried in a tomb, one day they would come to understand that this person with power to change the situation eventually would, and that God was at work during that time. So every time we're in a place of fear, every time we don't understand what's going on and we're tempted to give up, or we're tempted to quit on ourselves and to quit on God, we're also invited to ask, am I willing to trust that even when I cannot see how God is working in the middle of this storm in my life, when I am most afraid, God is most at work?